and the Bulldog.
I have a leg injury and a foot injury right now.
A leg and a foot. Are they on the same
side of my body?
Side of your body?
Yes.
Okay.
Left.
What happened to you?
I got stung by a bee. And then I think I got stung by another bee.
Oh, come on.
I think I did.
Well, when did this happen?
Last night. Last night. Who knew?
It's Mike Shope.
Huh. Just never thought about getting stung by a bee at night.
I don't know.
But there would still be bees at night.
I guess.
That to sound like the flat earth thing.
Right,
there would, well, the bees just don't disappear when it gets dark.
Okay, but I've never seen one at night.
Well, it's dark.
And the Bulldog.
Maybe they would not be out at night, but you disturbed it, so it came out and said, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, they weren't expecting me.
I'm in here trying to watch the Vietnam War on PBS.
Right.
And you're what are you doing sitting down in the chair? This is my time.
You are not supposed to.
Right.
This is our time.
Right.
That's what the bee said.
Right. So,
on behalf of the other bees.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I have bees. I guess I got stung that one time 50 years ago, so of course I do. But I have bees. Carpenter bees.
All right.
They don't really care about me. They care about perfectly round circles in my wood.
Yeah.
In the siding.
Yeah.
That's what they're about. And then eating out ants, I guess, or whatever else is in there. Bugs.
Whatever you say.
Yeah. Carpenter bees for the win. Hashtag carpenter bees. Who says hashtag anymore? With us now on the West Her hotline. We just text. Chad DeDominicis, always a pleasure to welcome Chad to the show. Expected Buffalo at CM DeDominicis. Chad, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. Are you enjoying Olympic hockey, men and women, Chad?
Yes, I am. Yes. The women's ones that have seen the U.S. dominate has been really cool. And the men's side has been with a couple games exception. I think it's been more competitive maybe than I remember in the past, especially when NHL players were in it. So that's kind of cool to see.
Are you old enough to remember, listen to this question, Bulldog, NHL players in the Olympics, Chad?
Yes, I am old enough to remember that. Yeah, I'm not that young.
What's your first Olympic hockey memory? Like what year? Salt Lake?
Oh, man. Probably. I mean, it's hard to go that far back. I mean, obviously the Olympic memory that's burned into my brain is the Sidney Crosby, Ryan Miller one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I have memories beyond that too, but they're not as burned in as that one.
Yeah. 2010. Before we get into the meat of it here, talking about the Sabres and the season so far and what they may need here, as far as like trade deadline ideas go, Chad, let me just pick your brain a little bit on this tournament so far. And knowing that Thompson has played just over 9 minutes now, the last two games of this thing so far.
Total.
Well, 9 minutes in each game.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, the power play, but 5-on-5, he's hardly seeing the ice. But he's scored a couple of power play goals, so I feel like he's probably safe in the lineup. But, I don't know, how are you feeling about his ice time and how safe he is in the lineup?
At 5-on-5, the ice time isn't that's surprising to me. I mean, on that team, the way it's built, he's a third line winger, especially playing wing, which we know isn't necessarily his strong suit from the Sabres. He's probably better in the middle. So the ice time doesn't surprise me. I didn't like the line combo. Actually, I don't like a lot of the line combos or even pairs that Mike Sullivan has going there, but it's probably a different conversation. But I think he's safe from a power play aspect. Like you said, he's scored a couple power play goals. I think he's made some plays here and there on the power play that'll keep him in the lineup. Particularly at 5-on-5, I don't think he's really been that great. But a lot of that, again, kind of goes back. I don't think he fits that best on the wing. I don't think he fits that best in the style they're asking him to play, being that low in the lineup. But that's kind of what you get when you have a team full of all-stars. You kind of got to switch. Go from a first-line center to a third-line winger. You got to switch every game a little bit, and maybe it's not going the best for him.
You know, early this year, you know, when the Sabres were floundering, even though some of their metrics weren't so bad, Bulldog, you were sort of frustrated with Thompson defensively. Yeah. Has that gotten better to your eyes or Chad's? I mean, if they put another way, I mean, I know they have very different options for their lineup than the Sabres would, Team USA. But if they relegated him to a lower position because they didn't think he was playing enough of a two-way game, would that be fair?
I mean, we're talking about the Sabres or the Olympic team?
Sorry. USA. I mean, if they, he comes into the season, if not the Olympics, with a certain reputation for being one-sided as a player. Yeah. I wonder if that has gotten better is all I'm asking.
I mean, I think to certain degrees it's improved. I don't think it's by any means a strong suit. And to be fair, like, I don't think they're asking him to play like a checking line role in the Olympics either. I think when they want to do that, they rotate him out with Trocheck, which they've done. But when they want to go create some offense, then he's out there with Larkin. And I think it was Keller last game. Before that, it was Connor. So I think they're kind of using him and Trocheck as a rotation, depending what they want out of that line. I mean, to be honest, I think Larkin really has not been as good as he was during the Four Nations. I think that's a little bit of a disappointment for them, too. And there's still time here. Right? These are the games that matter now. So we'll start seeing how some of these guys look. And if you know they look better than they've looked in group play, which hasn't been overly impressive by any means. Like I said, that's a couple games to work out. And then, you know, you're probably going to get Sweden in the quarters, which the team hasn't looked great, but can definitely match you on talent.
Yeah, and conversely, Dahlin, I think, has maybe been Sweden's best player. Like he's getting a ton of ice. It was curious. I think you remember just last year, Chad, the Four Nations, like he wasn't on special teams and he was just sort of kind of down in the pecking order. They were deferring to Hedman and Carlson in all kinds of situations and especially special teams. And that has turned around. I think they saw the light on playing Dahlin more prominently, and I think they're getting paid off for it.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, they learned their lesson there, it seems like. You know, like Hedman just got back, but he hasn't been great. Rasmus Anderson hasn't really looked great for them. I mean, honestly, a lot of that team, to be honest, hasn't looked that good. But yeah, I think Dahlin's been very good for them. Forsling, too, along with him in that pair. I think that team is really kind of being dragged along by Nylander, Dahlin, and Forsling to this point to get them where they are. Now, they have, like I said, they have the talent to definitely get going and in a winner-take-all situation. And that's a risky game. But, in terms of Dahlin, I think it's been great. And it's good, you know, on a national, global stage.
Yeah.
I think for people to see him and understand he is one of the best defensemen in the world that just has played on a bad team for a long time, you know, that's pretty good for him.
Chad DeDominis is on the Wester Hotline with us. To sort of circle back to Mike's question about Thompson as it pertains to the Sabres and his defensive play overall, I would, and we can launch from here into, you know, what we all think of what's been going on here. I think when you win like 20 out of 25 games, a lot of your complaints kind of go by the wayside. You see the team differently than when it looks like you're, you know, starting down the path to a 15th straight year out of the playoffs. So for me, I would say I'm not noticing Thompson as negatively impacting plays defensively as I was. That doesn't mean it's not happening. It's just like I've got different glasses on, I think, to an extent, because the results have been good. Or maybe, Chad, you can tell us if his overall play has gotten that much better. I feel like he's kind of who he is. So it would surprise me if he made great strides in that area. But effort can go a long way defensively, and maybe he's just dialed in a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's helped. It's hard to say. I don't know if he's come a long way. I think positionally he understands his responsibilities more. I think playing with Doan and Benson on his wing for the most part, along with Tuck, has been helpful. There's stretches, though, of both Thompson and Tucker, I think, have sometimes extended stretches of just not being impactful within a game. And then the nice thing is, the depth this team has shown, that hasn't been a big deal, where in years past, like, your first line's not going, forget it. They've had the ability to be three lines deep, at least, for the majority of the season when they're fully healthy. So that's good. But, I think the defense playing better. I think they're buying in to, you know, being better around the net as a team from a defense and a forward group. There's less second chance opportunities. It's something I really noticed this season. And I think that's helping them in their defensive zone. They're able to get the puck out quicker. They're not giving up those high quality chances they were in the past. And that's kind of helping everybody out.
So, Chad, Money Puck has the Sabres playoff odds at 68.1%, just better than 2 out of 3. Intuitively, does that sound about right, high or low?
I honestly think Money Puck is one of the lower odds. If you go to some of the other sites, I think they're higher, somewhere like in the 70s. But I think that's about right. I think 65 to 75% kind of seems about right. Maybe 65 on the lower end. When you really think about what they would have to do to fall out of it, I mean, I think I haven't looked at the standings in a while because I've taken a break from living in it every single day for the last month. I think they're like a 5 or 6 point lead still. So it's,
yep, five.
You know, you're right there. Yeah, you're right there. The team that really honestly scares me, if anybody catching them from not currently in the playoff position, would be Ottawa if their goaltending comes together. But even them, I mean, they're pretty far back. You got to jump teams. It's only 25 games, too. I mean, to make up 5 to 7, 8 points in 25 games would be a task. I mean, I always think about, like, if I was the Sabres in Ottawa's position, we'd be sitting here like, come on, they're not making that run. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's a lot, you know? And we're nervous because it's 14, 15 years where, oh, my God, the floor is going to fall out here. But, I mean, we're 56 games in. They are what they are. They are a playoff team that is competing for top three in that division, and they're in a great spot. You just got to win a little over 500 of your games, 500 of the games, and like a 565, I think, gets them to like 97 to 98 points, something like that. And then, I don't know, if you have a year where you get 98 to 100 points and you can't get in, then I don't know. You're just never going to make it.
Fold the franchise. Right. I mean, if that happens. What's your version of how they've turned it around this year?
I think it's a little bit what I said. It's the buy-in. Buy-in to the type of game that they have to play. And really this team, think about the last few years, they've been a rush team, right? That they get out and go. And if you take that away from them, you know, the way I've always put it, they don't have the curveball. But this year they have a curveball. They're a different team. I think Josh Stone goes a lot into that, has really helped them be a different team with their forwards and their makeup. But I think it's gotten, you know, Benson, you know, he plays that style, and some other guys kind of feeding into that, and they've been a more effective forechecking team. I think Noah Offlin is a very underrated forechecking player that they've added here. So they're a deeper team. I think that's what it is. They're deeper offensively. If it's not so much of Tage isn't going, you're in trouble. They have scoring all throughout their lineup. I think when I did the last production pace update, like they had like 6 or 7 guys on pace for 50 points or higher. So they can get scoring when they want it. And defensively, they've committed. You know, power has gone ways, I think, defensively. It's been really good for them the last 2 months of the season. Byram has played better. I think he's coming back a little bit. But still, I think that top four has been solid. And not to mention, Samuelson all of a sudden is like a Norris defenseman now.
Right.
Like, you know, when you add all that in, they're a better two-way team. And it has, you know, reflected.
Chad, I've referred to it this way. Those top four on defense, I feel like, are as close to a superpower as they have. Like that just is so impactful at both ends of the ice, getting out of your own zone promptly without a lot of distress or giveaways that turn into chances and or goals. And then, of course, in the offensive zone, they're all, including Samuelson, which is still an adjustment. I got to chuckle as I say it, you know, deep behind the goal line, still capable of getting back and still, you know, defending when it's called for. But they are playing a lot. And the other two defenders have been somewhat of a rotating cast. You know, Timmins has been hurt. Kesselring has never really been right yet this year. And I don't know how much to count on that changing at some point here. So I feel like if we were to start in on a conversation about what they need, that's where I'm looking, is someone to lift their bottom pair to where you can live with it for 15 to 17 minutes maybe and not have everybody else, those big four, playing 25 minutes a night.
Yeah, I think I looked at it a couple weeks ago when I did an article on it. Like, their top four are all top 60 in time on ice. And like, they were like one of, it might be the only team or maybe one of two teams that have that. I think it's the only team at the time that had that, which is pretty insane. So yeah, and you kind of reflect a little bit at the end here going into the break when really it kind of felt like just get to the bell, just get to the break, get to the break, reset. You started to see it. I think Samuelson, you know, defensively started to have some, he's just tired. Byram, same thing, a lot of the guy, all of them, you know, just they look tired. And you know, with Bryson and Metsä playing very little until Bryson was hurt, and then the last game he played 4 minutes and terrorized you in those 4 minutes, and that's tough. And I think Bryson's done a decent job stepping in when asked, but clearly not his best game. Like you said, Kesslering just hasn't had it. And I'm curious, with some time off and the injury has, if he looks better, but it's a little bit concerning when, you know, the coach is saying he's had some talks with him about his performance. And, you know, sometimes guys just don't fit, but I don't want to go there yet. You know, let's give him a little bit of time, see how it goes, see how he looks when he's healthy. But yeah, I agree. They need to get another depth defenseman here. They are one injury right in that top four from being, you know, from, like you said, being a superpower to being in trouble. So they need to find something there to help them. You know, Timmins was okay when he was in early in the season. I think he was more impact on the play on the penalty kill than a 5-on-5. You know, if you remember back in the bleak days, the Byram and Timmins 5-on-5 pair was pretty bad. So, you know, I'm not believing in a lot there, but the other part of it too is that he does have a contract for next season as well. So maybe they just see how that goes. But that's the interesting part coming out of this break, that hey, the deadline's in a week. Once we get going here, there's not a lot of time to make decisions and see, especially Timmons seems, I think, going to be ready right away. I think he was still on crutches like a week ago, they said. So, yeah, I agree. I think they really need to target a depth defenseman and more than just like a Bryson level. I think something a little bit more above that. So to your point, you know, maybe Kesslering and some other guy can at least give you 12 minutes a night instead of 6 to 7.
You know, Chad knows what he's talking about just from listening to him. But if you go to expectedbuffalo.com, for example, his work is a piece on Jack Quinn today, and every point is substantiated with proof, stats and charts and some highlights. So Quinn is an interesting one, Chad. This year, in general, it's a young team, almost the youngest in the league, but with a chance on a record-long playoff drought. Like, you got to do something here, I think, if you're the Sabres. Is Quinn, what is he? Is he obvious as a piece you'd want to move? Like, does he have, is he marketable? I mean, he's young, so he might be, and his stats are okay. Like, what would you think the league thinks of him, and what do you think you know the Sabres think?
Yeah, he's been the one where I've been watching watching some shifts over the last couple of weeks that got me into the article I mentioned I wrote today. And it really started from when I did the production pace, and I saw it was like a 53-point pace. And I thought to myself, since when? Like, this doesn't seem that late from when you watch him. So I went back and dug into it. And, you know, a lot of the stuff you see with your eyes and then the metrics that lead into the defense part of it, you see it. And there's struggles against teams, you know, like Florida, Carolina, those heavier teams, they'll play the more forechecking style that you're going to see in the postseason. That kind of gets me to, well, you know, is he going to struggle in that situation? Does it make sense? Is that where your replacement spot is? But then you get into the individual production numbers, and well, at 5-on-5 this year, he leads your team in primary assists. He's third on the team, or I think fifth on the team in goals at 5-on-5. He's second on the team in points per hour at 5-on-5. So you're like, okay, I mean, there's that offensive aspect too you have to think about. And it's almost like a specialist in a sense, but at the same time, they wrote in the article, well, he's statistically, by the numbers, one of the worst power play players on your team, so that's not really a specialist in that regard. It's a difficult decision. It's basically if they believe they can improve overall on a two-way game and still replace his 5-on-5 scoring, which I think they can, I definitely think he has a marketable asset. I mean, he's 24 years old. He's on a 50-point pace. Somebody will take that as a former top 10 pick, too. You know, it's not like you have to give him away to whatever. I think somebody will pay reasonable price for that, and you can then replace him with a more two-way player that, whether it's just for this season or beyond this season, you know, whatever. But yeah, I think that's the spot I identify on this roster that you, if you can improve upon it, you probably want to. And if not, then, you know, okay, I guess you got to find, you know, it's up to the coaching staff to find a way in the playoffs to shelter him and hide him so he doesn't get taken advantage of.
If they are unable to swing a move, because same thing. I think if I get asked out, you know, out and about, whatever, like, you know, what do you think? What could they improve on? Like, they're so hot here. I always end up on Jack Quinn. If they can't find an out of, you know, off the team addition to get a more, like you said, well-rounded two-way player, is there any chance Justin Danforth fits that that description? I mean, I don't think there's any chance he's keeping pace with the offense you just described. But I wonder about him as a fit there if he ever gets healthy.
Yeah, I don't know, because he only played four games, right? So it's hard to really know where he fits. I think Danforth, if anything, becomes rotational with whatever Greenway becomes. Honestly, in my opinion, yeah. I think Greenway is probably headed for the injured reserve, like with surgery, because that just seems to not be going well. But I think he's a rotational fourth line guy for you. I don't think he's going to step into a Quinn spot. And plus, right. You know, what do you have, like a broken kneecap or something like that? I mean, I don't know. How does that? You go when you come back and, you know, all of that. But I do think, you know, what they're looking at is the tough situation makes it tricky, for sure. And I wrote about this, I think, last week. Is I'm in the category, if you want to keep him and, you know, be a rental and whatever and deal with it in the summer, that's fine, great, grand, wonderful, whatever. I get where you are as a team that you want to do that.
Yep.
The consequences of that, which I think they recognize, and I think people need to understand, is what that likely means is they're not going to go out and pay an expensive price for a rental. Because you can't have that rental go, then you can't have Tuck also go, and you paid, you know, a first-round pick or your prime prospect assets, because then you go into the summer, and, well, now you're dealing with, you know, a shortened cupboard, if you will, to trade with, and you have two guys who just walk out the door on you. So I think the focus is more on depth. We talked about defense. I think they probably want a two-way guy, maybe more of a can-be-a matchup centerman, some face-offs. Like Teddy Bluger is a guy who makes a lot of sense from Vancouver. He's in the Olympics right now playing for Latvia. Fourth-line guy, decent centerman. He's on a tear right now with the scoring, actually. Just coming back from an injury himself. I think he's played 10 games now. I think that's the kind of player you're looking at. Maybe like a third or fourth line guy that can make you more of a two-way guy and kind of shifting my focus to playoffs. You know, I'm looking for matchup guys because I don't think they really have that on this team right now.
Right.
And that could become a problem in the playoffs. So I'm kind of looking for somebody that I can put out there, you know, 60 to 70% of the time in a playoff series against the opponent's top line and not get rolled over.
Very good, Chad. Well, great work. Love the Quinn article. Really informative for anybody trying to maybe having taken like a decade off from the Sabres at the trade deadline, trying to dig in a little bit to it. Highly recommend it. Thank you for your time today.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Yes. Chad DeDominicis, expectedbuffalo.com. That's me. I'm not, you know, being critical. That's definitely me.
Yeah, right.
Back in. Let's hear about this, Freddie. Let's hear about these guys we're talking about.
Teddy Bluger.
Teddy, Freddie. I'm ready for Teddy or Freddie at this point. Bring it on. I wonder how much the Sabres will be willing to do, and that you can only know from what they're able to do. Like, what kind of shakeup, if that's not too strong, do they want to pull off? They're not really a team in need of a shakeup, although they didn't really end that well after all the success they had prior to about a week before the Olympic break. 803-0550 for your calls. Tyreek Hill, released by Miami, had us talking about, well, what do you know, the Bills and their wide receiver plans this year. We will be back after sports. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
Hour number two, rolling along here on a Wednesday. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We've already got Sabres practice news, Derek.
We've already got Sabres practice news from Paul, who ambushed our show in the first hour. It was a fun segment.
I'm just happy he made it to practice.
Yes, he made it to practice on time. Zach Benson, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, Jordan Greenway, not on the ice for practice today. Josh Norris, Josh Dunn at practice in non-contact jerseys. I have two thoughts. One, I don't expect the Sabres to go from 0 to 60 right away with their first practice since the Olympic break began, especially because you also don't have other players there. Two, at the same time, I don't love that there's three players still not on the ice. And the other two that have been banged up are in non-contact jerseys. I just need to hear it from Lindy Ruff saying, yeah, we're not going 0 to 60 right away, to confirm my thought and feel better. So we'll be on the lookout for those quotes there from Paul Hamilton to see what we're really looking at here. Because, like I said, I don't love that, but I just need to hear it to feel reassured. Like, no, you were right. Your first thought's right.
Mm-hmm.
I need to hear it from Lindy Ruff, though.
The Sabres' first game back will be exactly a week from today, Wednesday, February 25th, at the New Jersey Devils, who not having a good season there for New Jersey. I mean, we talked with Paul. He had a caller. We've had a caller talking about maybe trading for Nico Hischier. They're not trading their captain, but boy, they are not having a good season. So I'm not saying definitely won't happen, but probably won't happen. 803-0550, the number to call. Want to jump in. We're talking Olympic hockey as well. Canada, Czechia, currently in the first intermission. Czechia, though, up 2-1 on Canada. This is the first time the Canadians have been trailing the entire tournament. They have had the lead or at least been tied in every single game. This is the first time they're trailing. Czechia has been on them. I don't know if both goals were power play goals for Czechia. I don't believe so. Just the second one.
The second one was a power play goal. The first one was a turnover. Like I said, it was an absolute pizza by Mark Stone throwing it in the middle of the ice.
And then we've also got the combine coming up next week. The testing is actually going to begin later next week on Thursday, but everyone's going to be getting into town in Indianapolis earlier that week. Arnold Sacapaccio will be there as well. I believe Tim Graham is going to be there as well. And so we'll get a ton of combine coverage. There are a number of names I'm really excited to kind of get an eye on. And I mentioned this the other night on the nightcap, just sort of wanting to see what the conversations are about some of these players following the combine, right? Once you've gotten all the GMs talking to all the insiders and giving their thoughts, what have you.
Leaking all the things they want to have.
And two of the guys I'm looking for with that, I may have also mentioned this the other day on the Extra Point Show. I'm not 100% sure, but definitely for the nightcap. The guys I'm really curious to hear about are two different positions and two positions of need for the Bills. One is Jordan Tyson, the Arizona State wide receiver, who on paper, Derek, I'm a huge fan of. He has been one of the best players to watch on Arizona State. When you watch him, you can see the talent just flat out. The problem is with him, boy, is it a lengthy injury history. And I mean a lengthy injury history. In the last three seasons, 2022, torn ACL, PCL, MCL. 23, broken collarbone. And then this past year, a hamstring issue that basically lasted half of the season. He's missed, I think, 48% of the college games he could have played in his career. There are real serious red flags with his injury history. It's nothing off the field. It's not even really anything on the field. It is just the fact of what's the best ability?
Availability.
Availability.
But I also like to subscribe to what you've told me about. I forget who you attributed the quote to, but you're injury prone until you're not.
Oh, I can't remember. That is a good quote, though.
And the thing about it is, I think of a player like Nick Chubb. Guy goes through two devastating knee injuries, gets picked in the second round, plays great until obviously ultimately he gets several.
Horrific, yeah.
But he becomes Nick Chubb, a solid top tier NFL running back until, for several seasons, until he has that knee injury that will ultimately spell the end of his effectiveness in his career. And even then, he looked okay with Houston last year.
Looked fine, yeah.
Todd Gurley. Still gets taken in the first round.
Gurley is the one I think about, yeah.
The devastating knee injury there that he suffers. The Rams don't blink twice, and they get, what is it, 4 or 5 years of incredible production out of him?
I mean, he is the engine to that offense. It's not Goff, it's not the receivers, it's Gurley.
Gurley's the one that helps get them to that Super Bowl. Sammy Watkins didn't have injury problems in Clemson. It only shows up in the NFL. So when I look at a college medical bill of health and I see, like, what is it about them, the injury history, the injury concerns, Will Johnson falls out of the first round for Arizona. He's not the first round talent, but he plays.
I don't think he was bad by any means.
Yeah, like he's got room to grow. And it might become one of the more incredible value picks that you have from that draft class last year. It's a risk. But sometimes if you're able to use not the high-end pick, like not the first-round pick I typically would think, that's where I'm risk-averse in that situation. But if I could use a second-round pick, a third-round pick on a player like that, the upside beats the floor.
I will tell you,
Tyson is the exact kind of guy that if he is available at 26 because of the injury concerns, I'm running his name up to the board or whatever it is.
It's a blue chip talent.
I think he has that ability. I think if you just take one of those injuries, even maybe last year's hamstring injury, you just take those issues out.
Tricky. They stink.
And they'd stick with you. I mean, that's really what it was. It just stuck with him the whole year. And it, I think, got worse towards the end of the year and what have you. You just take that out, or the collarbone, you take that out. I think you're looking at a player that is not available past pick 15, just straight up not available.
Yep.
And then the other one I'm looking at, not an injury concern, but an age concern, Akeem Mesidor, the edge rusher out of Miami. I know I've brought his name up a lot. He was the fellow Miami pass rusher. Reuben Bain is the other guy. Yep. Short arms, but a stud talent. Mesidor, though, is going to be 25 in his rookie year. We've been seeing, though, the last few draft cycles, the age problem really not play a factor, especially at quarterbacks. But really throughout, it's not really playing a factor anymore because teams are just like, well, give me the talented player now.
Can I get my 5-year rookie contract of him until he's 29 and then we'll deal with it from there? Can I get the best of his abilities right now at age 25 and get 5 years out of it? 25, 26, 27, 28, 29. Like, you count the age 25 season. And that is something that I don't think teams blink twice about. Maybe not with a first-round pick. You typically want to have a player with a little bit more youth injected into that selection. But if it's late first round, teams don't blink twice about that. No, not anymore.
I don't think so at all.
Not anymore.
And so those two, I think definitely for the Bills, I'm keeping an eye on early in the process. And then one, I just kind of want to hear what's said because it could benefit the Bills. We don't really have a number two quarterback past Fernando Mendoza. The one is maybe Ty Simpson of Alabama. If all of a sudden you're starting to hear like, no, he's going to be a first-round pick, just maybe later, I think that's a benefit to the Bills. Because then all of a sudden that might be one team, like maybe Pittsburgh, who doesn't go out and get a wide receiver or doesn't go and add a player that maybe the Bills are looking at, what have you, and it can be, great, here we go. Again, it's not going to be those quarterback classes from the last few years where 4 or 5 are gone in the first 20 picks. But hopefully it's not the Kenny Pickett draft either, where one's taken and it's in the middle of the first round.
What are you talking about? Pittsburgh's going to go ahead and let's see.
Aaron?
Maybe they bring back Rodgers. That'd be hilarious.
Malik Willis? I actually like Willis.
Not
for them.
You're telling me that Marcus Mariota isn't going to be signed by the Pittsburgh Steelers to be their quarterback next year?
It's
I had to find a violent answer
here. It's the worst place to be. For any football team is just complete and utter quarterback purgatory where every answer feels like an insult.
Hang on. Flacco has the opportunity to do the funniest thing ever and sign with Pittsburgh.
It actually does. That would be.
Because then, A, you complete the AFC North cycle, and B, Pittsburgh signs a veteran quarterback to start.
Oh,
but he did great in Cincinnati, guys.
Just awful.
Violent
awful
choices.
Place to be. Good for Pittsburgh. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's go back to the phones. And Mike's up first this segment. Mike, how we doing, man?
Great, guys. Just two things. First of all, really quick, Thurman Thomas slipped from the first round to the second round.
Yes, that's right.
He tore his ACL his senior year. And as a matter of fact, he never got his ACL reconstructed. He played his entire career without an ACL in his one knee.
Lindsey Vonn before
kind of wild.
Goodness.
But the main reason I called, let's talk about Sabres. One of my concerns is that we have 5 guys, Benson, Norris, Kulich, Danforth, and Dunn, who are present, and Greenway, 6, who are presently NHL hockey players that can't be sent down to the minors, that when they come up, when they get healthy, we don't have room for Osland, Hellenius. We don't have room for a lot of guys. I think we have to do something with the glut of talent that we have in the youth talent, because there's nowhere for those guys to play when everyone's healthy. I mean, they're top 6 or top 9 guys, and our top 9 is filled when those players come back. We've got a goalie in Rochester, Levy, who's doing great things in Rochester. He had a great season last year, but he's got guys in front of him here that, for whatever reason, he's not being given the opportunity, even though they gave Colton Ellis, who had basically the same stats as him, last year. They gave him the opportunity. So you've got a guy down there. You got all this youth. Isaac Rosean has shown that he can score at the NHL level when he's given the opportunity to play top 6 minutes. You've got so much youth down there with nowhere for them to go because of the glut of veteran injured players we have on this roster right now. I just think that our GM has to make some type of a 3-for-1 trade package, a levy package, one of these, whether it's Oslin, Hellenius, one of these guys, package somebody that's on the roster, whether it's Kulich, somebody, and bring in a top six, bring in a really top player from one of these teams that's rebuilding. It's just otherwise they're just rotting in the minors, and they're blocked from coming up to the NHL.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. Devin Levi is the goalie from Rochester, and yeah, he had a very good season last year. His problem this year has been inconsistency. He's had a really good run lately.
The plan, though, this year was to give him uninterrupted goalie number one status in Rochester and not even be thought about to be called up to the NHL. That was the plan this year. It looks like they're following through with it, and I respect that at least. Now, though, with Levi's GM gone, those plans kind of get thrown out the window, and you kind of have to deal with it from there and see what Kekalainen thinks about him. I do wonder about the youth question there. When everyone gets healthy, players get sent down. Like, that is something to look at. The first player I'm looking when it comes to trying to upgrade, it is not about bringing someone into the top six. It is you try to find an upgrade on the roster from players that are here now, not the injured ones. If I can get something for Jack Quinn to upgrade within the lineup, or if I have to include Jack Quinn in a trade for, say, Justin Falk,
mm-hmm.
and I need to go to St. Louis and they ask for an NHL player that can play in the middle six, yeah, maybe I'm saying, how about Jack Quinn? Then I don't have to give you another pick.
I see, he is the guy I think of if we're going to move somebody off to go bring somebody in that's not a prospect, it is Quinn. I think they still need help on the power. I agree with mm-hmm. what Paul said, and I think we've been talking about it too. Depth defense is probably their biggest need.
Depth defense is their biggest need. They really can't
handle an injury where they're at. I mean, Kesselring has already been in and out of the lineup. They've already picked up a number of injuries there, but they've dealt with that on the forward side of things and have been, for the most part, actually fine. But Quinn is the one I would think about, like, okay, maybe move him out. We've got a guy, Buffalo Tundra, tweeted in about an hour ago when we were more talking about the Blues, but he brought up a name like Dylan Holloway. Young guy, really not having a good season this year with St. Louis after having a very nice one last year.
It's that it's been injury-riddled, and the Sabres mm-hmm. already have enough of those players going through that right now this year.
Yeah.
Zucker has been in and out of the lineup. Kulik still dealing with the blood clots.
Norris,
Benson, both of them in and out of the lineup at various times for various timelines, and they've been dealing with it, and they've been dealing with it well. Ultimately, at the end of the day, caller mentions Justin Danforth. We haven't seen him since the beginning of the season.
Right.
I haven't even heard anything about him. The Sabres report there, like, who's on the ice right now and who's in non-contact jerseys. Danforth hasn't even been mentioned.
Did you mention Greenway in a non-contact jersey?
Greenway was not at practice.
Okay.
Like, he was not on the ice for practice.
And the feeling is there that might be a long-term IR kind of guy that the
you
surgery.
You could free up $4 million on LTIR with Jordan Greenway. You can, oddly enough, if Norris isn't back, you might start wondering, do you LTIR Norris?
Norris as well.
And then you can really get fun and fancy with your deadline acquisitions, because that's $8 million off the cap there that you can go ahead and play around with in the playoffs. I don't like dirty tactics. I'm not a fan of Matthew Tkachuk. That's how we started the show. However, if push comes to shove, and you need to use the LTIR?
That's why it's there.
It's there. Other teams have used it. And hey, like
Zach. Great success, by the way.
Like Zach said, sometimes you need villains in sports.
803-0550, the number to call. We've got Marcel Louis-Jacques coming up at 12 o'clock. Talk a little bit on the Miami Dolphins, the move they've been making. Current update right now on Chechia and Canada. Chechia is still up 2-1, about 13-50 left in the second here. The big news, though, from that game, Sidney Crosby heading to the locker room for Team Canada. We'll see if we get any updates on that. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, you're listening to WGR Sports Radio 550, now also on 107.7 and 104.7 FM.
morning, everybody.
How's it hanging? It's raining. It's not as foggy. Oh, my God. I drove last night.
Yeah. Last night was an experience.
Good Lord.
Now, did you do what I did where, so I'm leaving work, I rolled down my two front windows for maybe half the drive just so I could see a little bit better?
No.
Because it was not happening fast enough where they would it would clear up fast enough. So I'm like, I can't see left or right.
It didn't do anything for the fog in front of you.
No, but that's the thing. I had the fog and then I had just the you know, closed off. I'm blanking on the wording of it, but
you didn't start your car and let it defrost a little bit?
I want to go home, and I don't have a car starter, so I'm not sitting in the car for 5-10 minutes and then, all right, I guess I'll leave now. It's not happening.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But so I rolled down the windows for like half the car ride.
So, no, I didn't do what you did.
No. Worked out, though. Worked out well.
Yeah, it worked out well. You know what? Everyone made it home safe. That's the big deal here. But it's a rainy Wednesday morning.
It's a sign of spring.
Here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. He's Zach Jones. I'm Derek Kramer. We're hanging out with you for 3 hours. That's right. 3 hours today.
We've got Olympic hockey, elimination hockey especially.
It is.
We've already gotten one game.
Baby.
One game's out of the way. Slovakia taking down Germany 6-2. The last time I'd actually checked on that game, it was 5-1 Slovakia. They just absolutely handled the Germans. Then coming up at 10:40, so in about 40 minutes, is going to be Canada, Czechia.
Yep.
After that, we've got Finland, Switzerland, and then at 3:10, the Buffalo Sabres are playing. It's Rasmus Dahlin versus Tage Thompson, USA versus Sweden.
I saw something actually very fun about that. You say the Buffalo Sabres are playing. There's 11 teams that have players facing each other in U.S. and Sweden, including Minnesota. 3 U.S. players, 4 Swedes. So there's your real fascination there. Minnesota's got 7 players playing in this game.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota's good. Okay, that's fine. Because in my head, I'm like, could I maybe think of the team, you know, faster or maybe more clear? Minnesota's fine. I have no issue that it's Minnesota.
Yeah.
I wish it was an Eastern Conference team. Tell you that much. I wish it was an Eastern Conference team.
But at the same time, it's 11 different teams have players facing each other in this game. And I just think that's cool. A third of the league has players facing each other, not just players involved in this game. They're facing each other.
We talked about the women's game yesterday and how the United States really is just running a different race.
Almost concerningly so.
Yeah, and that gold medal game is tomorrow between the United States and Canada. Looking to the men's side, how into this tournament have you been, honestly?
I haven't been as locked into it as I would want to be. Mostly because it's been in group play a little disappointing. We haven't had a lot of that spice that you see with the upsets. Best on best hockey is still great. But the countries that aren't deep enough showed us that.
Germany and today, you know.
Germany was supposed to be one that, like, we talked with Matt Larkin. I talked with Joe Yurden over on the weekend a couple weeks ago. Like, there was an interest about Germany with how top-heavy they are. But that they could be this fascinating team that could maybe steal a couple of games or put themselves into a medal conversation because they have Draisaitl and Stützle and even Paterka and Sturm. And they have Grubauer in net. And you have enough NHL talent that you might be able to make some waves. Instead, the Germans really disappoint. I'm pretty sure they only won one game.
I believe that's right.
So it really was a very disappointing tournament for them. And the most notable thing we saw from the Germans was Matthew Tkachuk chirping at Leon Draisaitl,
which like felt so unfair.
It's unfair in a way, yes. And funny enough, when I heard Jeremy and Joe this morning talking about it a little bit, of like, you're standing there on the perch of one of the most loaded teams you can have.
That's my thing, yeah.
The best part is, you could still say that and not know which team he's referring to specifically.
Oh, I mean, I think he is. I mean, it's U.S. Germany playing, but I think he's absolutely saying that.
But Florida in the NHL, too.
Florida against Edmonton, I think absolutely. It's more, like, again, it's funny in the moment, but then thinking about it, you're like, that's also a real cheap shot. Like, Drysdale's got to be sitting there going, like, dude, your third line has Tage Thompson on it.
Your fourth line has Jack Hughes.
Yeah, my third, fourth line aren't NHL guys. Like, what are you talking about, dude?
Yeah.
Like, you should be beating us. If you don't go play Canada for the gold, you're a loser.
And
like,
I think
it's kind of the feeling of it.
I want to answer a question that Jeremy and Joe also asked about Matthew Tkachuk. Do you hate Matthew Tkachuk? Yes. I'll try to say it quicker next time.
Ooh, ask
me the question.
I have a difficulty with that one, man. I like him
Why?
As a player a lot.
I don't like him as a player. I think that, I'm sorry, if you're going to run around like a knucklehead, you better also be able to answer the bell. And he turtles more often than a story of the tortoise and the hare.
So he's a pest.
He's a pest, but he has the size, and he throws the body around like he'll do it all the time. He'll fight you if things are going wrong, except when someone actually wants to fight him, he cowers. And it's the least respectful thing you can do in hockey. Throw the dirty hits and then not agree to stand up for it. Oh, but you'll do it in a group text for the show. For the showmanship, you'll fight.
Right, yeah.
But you won't do it when the code and honor actually come up to question. He's the worst kind of person. At least Brady will fight when it demands it in that scenario where, okay, you threw a questionable hit, dude. Got to throw fisticuffs for that. He doesn't. He's the worst kind of person in hockey.
But we would adore him if he was a Sabre.
Yes.
But that's my difficulty with it. We haven't experienced Sabres Florida in like a real serious run here of going to the playoffs, even a playoff series, what have you.
But you can learn who to hate.
Well, to a certain extent, but really I look at Tkachuk, both of them, but Matthew especially, and go, God, I wish he was a Sabre. Even now, that was a guy when he was getting ready to move from Calgary and there was the big discussions around him there. I would head over heels for him. Still am. I mentioned it going into this tournament as well. I thought he should have been the captain, not Austin Matthews. I think he – look.
On the world stage, you're right.
And that's my thing. I can hate him when Buffalo and Florida go up against each other. Florida and Buffalo routinely, even when the Sabres have not been particularly good, these last few years have had very chippy matchups. But I do like him as a player a lot.
The games before the Olympic break, I was sympathizing with the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Boston Bruins because of his antics. That makes me feel disgusted. Especially, look, I don't like Nikita Kucherov. He's one of those players that'll throw a dirty hit, and it's because he's basically throwing a tantrum. So I don't like Kucherov in that sense either. But what he did there, circling around after a line change after Lundell hits him and draws a penalty for it, Tkachuk skates around his own defensive end and hits Kucherov in the back. I'm sorry, you better be ready for a fight after that. And he turtles. He cowers. He is the worst. And I think it's also particularly easy for me to hate Matthew Tkachuk because he is a division rival. This is no different than saying Brad Marchand. It's a division rival on a successful team that if he was on your roster, you would love him and adore him. But he's not, and he's also on a division rival. Very easy for me to hate him. Am I putting it down for now? Yes. Because it's not the NHL being played right now. It's international play. And he is on the side that I support. But man, it is very easy for me to despise Matthew Tkachuk in the NHL. So easy.
I like him a lot. Until he really causes the Sabres problems, I'll probably stand on that. He's the exact kind of player I want on
the
Sabres.
It is kind of funny that the timing is interesting, where Florida is...
they're falling away.
Are they 10 points back or 9 points back?
I haven't actually checked the standings.
It's been a minute. We haven't had to. I think it's either 9 or 10 points away from Wild Card 2, Florida is... So it's almost like they're not as much of a threat, but you can't count them out entirely.
They are 8 points away.
8 points away when the Sabres are in a playoff spot. So it seems like maybe that timing is off. But I could still absolutely despise that guy without a second of doubt.
I think that's – but this is where we differ on this because I could see him retiring in 5, 10 years, whatever it is, and going, that was one of my favorite players to watch in this era.
Nope.
Just him and Brady less so. Brady I kind of enjoy because he just has like a bit of that like screw loose kind of aspect to his game for Ottawa.
The memes of him not being intelligent are – unfortunately funny.
Right. But Tkachuk, like I look at it as like he is the perfect modern player. I think every generation finds something to like in him because there is that scrappiness. He is willing to throw the body. He's got a little of that dirty streak in him, as you mentioned, but he's also incredibly skillful. He is part of that run here that we've seen where speed and skill dominates the games. I love him.
I just need him to have a shred of honor.
I'm not going to lie. What really is honor? Like, is it honorable for your team to take a penalty because you want to get chippy and fight, and now all of a sudden maybe the best player is not on the ice for you? Is that really honorable, or is he more just playing the team game of, yeah, I'm gonna be a little nasty, but I'm gonna stay on the ice. I'm not gonna take the random fight just to take the fight because honor decrees I have to.
Well, the thing is that his actions will draw that misconduct anyway. He's going to the box no matter what. It is that games get out of hand because you don't answer the bell. That's the thing. We got Paul Hamilton.
You guys think there's a hockey practice today or something? That you're going to sit here and talk hockey? I mean, I'm on my way.
I love this. We just got ambushed live by Paul Hamilton.
Sabres do practice today, which, I mean, we're going to have all but one Sabre practice by tomorrow.
We have hockey sticks in the...
Right next to Doug Marrone. Hey, you know what?
Jet Studios here and everything.
Hey, you know what, Paul? Look, take a seat. We're talking about Matthew Tkachuk and how easy it is to hate him.
Yeah, do you hate Matthew Tkachuk? Are you not a fan of Matthew Tkachuk?
All right, we're good.
Paul Hamilton.
How about this? I don't have a headset on.
That's fine.
I have to hold this up, but that's okay.
We gave him the worst mic.
So do you hate Matthew Tkachuk? That is the
how
key
easy
question.
Is it to hate Matthew Tkachuk?
I love the way he plays. See, that's the thing. I love players like that.
Same, yeah. Thank you. That's who I want on the Sabres, is a guy like him.
It's not that he's not on the Sabres, though. That's the thing. That's why it makes
it so easy. They have Benson.
Yeah, they have Benson.
To a lesser extent, they have Krebs.
Mm-hmm.
They're both like that. Benson more than Krebs, but they're both like that.
Tkachuk has the size, though, that he enforces it in a different way. I just don't like that he turtles so much. You know, like, he throws the dirty hit.
Tkachuk's more likely to run after Benson than he is somebody else, exactly. Other than that fight in the Four Nations.
Right.
But other than that, he's more apt to... that's what I hated about Scott Hartnell. Like, this supposed tough guy who would sit there and chase Tim Kennedy around the ice. It's like, really? He's a fake tough guy. And I think Tkachuk is more of a tough guy than he is, than Hartnell was, but... Yeah, he's still more times than not, you'll see him like sitting there holding somebody smaller than him.
Right. Yeah, and when someone actually wants to fight him because of something that he did, he goes ahead and puts the arms up, turtles, and it's over. And it's like, have a shred of dignity, man. I can't stand him. I think it's hilariously easy for me to hate him. Also, the games before the break, I'm sympathizing with the Bruins and the Lightning, and I needed a shower after that, Paul.
What I don't like is why do referees let him and Marchand do what they do? Why do they let the extra shot? Or why Marchand is skating back to the bench, he slaps a guy in the back of the ankles with his stick. And then the referees get between the two of them. It's like, okay, you know why he does it? Because you let him. You know,
you let him
take the cheap shots and that type of stuff. You let him sit there and run his mouth and get in people and that kind of stuff. They have a thing called a 10-minute misconduct. You give him a couple of those.
Oh, everything stops.
It'll end.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they want it to end. Mm-hmm. I don't think the NHL minds all that, to be quite honest with you.
I think they like it. Yeah.
This is why we have Paul Hamilton.
You do ultimately take some of the fighting out of the game, which some don't love. But you got to keep, I think, a little bit of that. I mean, the best thing for sports, I mentioned this yesterday, the best thing for sports is cheating scandals. But the other thing is villains. When you have players that people don't like, they will tune in to watch them get hit real hard or just lose, what have you. So I think leagues are smart. And yeah, let them keep building up the hatred amongst fans. It's good for us.
By the way, who does your guys' makeup?
Myself. Me, myself, and I.
I figured, you know, now that you're
I'm big, up at 4:30 in the
big
morning.
TV Paul. Stars yeah. and everything here.
What are you talking about? We don't have cameras on us right now.
Oh, I thought that one
they're,
was on. No. There.
They're pointed at us. They're That's not it. On.
Oh, so you don't have to. Well, I thought she just put the makeup on anyway, just to.
I do it for practice eventually.
Just in case that camera accidentally goes on. That
Paul, you think they point a live camera at me? It shuts off and breaks if that happens.
So, Paul, we now have elimination games in the Olympics. We've already seen one. Slovakia handled Germany
Not
quite
close.
Comfortably, 6-2, which has sort of been the theme of these Olympics up to
this
point.
That's the way it always is.
Yeah.
You have to wait until you get into. I think there will be one close game in the quarterfinals. That's U.S.-Sweden. Unfortunate for this U.S. that they got into this spot. It was just bad luck. First of all, Slovakia gets an upset win. And then Slovakia scores a goal with like 1 minute left in the Sweden game. Sweden still wins the game. That's why they pulled the goalie, because they knew it was going to drop them down where they're going to have to qualify if they don't score another goal, because they had to offset that Slovakia goal. So here now Slovakia winds up number one in that, and Sweden drops to third, which puts them seventh overall. Well, the U.S. is second, so who do they get? Sweden.
They get Sweden.
And the other three games, other three teams get cupcake games, and if they beat Sweden, there's a pretty good chance they're going to probably have to play Finland. And it's nobody's fault or anything. It's just Sweden had some bad luck along the way, the upset and then the goal on them. And they wind up going from first to third because all three teams were 2-1. It went to goal differential against each other.
And how have you thought the U.S. has played up to this point? I know for most of us, Canada's look like the most complete team up to this point. The U.S., though, was a bit shaky.
I just sit there and watch Canada and say to myself, let's see, your three centers are Crosby, McDavid, and MacKinnon. So for those of you who like to number lines, the third line center is MacKinnon. Really?
Yeah, you sit really? There and go, that's who? Really? That's, yeah.
Kind of disgusting.
That's your third line center? Really? Now, sometimes they pop him up on McDavid's line, but.
Well, that's just for fun.
And I think Eichel and Matthews have been the two best U.S. players, but they're not McDavid, they're, no. MacKinnon, and Crosby. You know, so Binnington is capable of being a better goalie than Hellebuck in these situations, these pressure situations. Hellebuck, for whatever reasons, tends to I think I know the reason. I don't know for sure. I think Winnipeg overplays him. And I think by the time he gets to the playoffs, he can't be Hellebuck anymore because he played so many games. That's my opinion. I think that's one of the reasons why he just doesn't come through in the big time. But on paper, yeah, the U.S. has better goaltending, probably a better defense. But those three centers are just – it reminds me of Gretzky, Lemieux, and Hawerchuk back when you guys were probably not even alive.
Yeah, no, that's right. But it's funny.
What are you laughing at?
You know, we're looking at the U.S. women's team. They look like they're in a different category from everybody else, the U.S. women's. The Canadian men might kind of be the same thing, where just the forward talent is just – they can run you out of the building. They really, really can't
now,
at any point.
In the Four Nations, the U.S. looked like they were going to win the thing, but Canada – prevailed, but it wasn't a big gap. It was close.
Yeah.
You know, so it's actually closer than I think it probably should be when you're running those three centers out. And Celebrini's been great. I've been looking forward to seeing how he was going to react. And he's just been great in this tournament.
He's
so
a joy.
Far.
I mean, he has come not out of nowhere because he was very good in college as well, but just.
He was
his
good in college, but
I didn't
foresee this at age 19. I foresaw a very good player. But I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and tell you that I've seen a guy who might be in the conversation for MVP.
Year number two.
In year number two.
Kind of like what was promised of Connor Bedard, but this is what Celebrini is doing within year two already. Mm-hmm. And it's the Sharks. It's not like it's a murderer's row of a roster there that he's got this advantage over Bedard in year two. It seems like Celebrini is doing what was almost promised of Bedard.
Yeah, he is so much fun to watch. Canada, Czechia, 10:40 today. You already mentioned you think we're only going to probably have one close game in the quarterfinals, that being U.S.
Maybe they'll
later.
Surprise us. I hope they surprise us. Now, of course, I'm going to be down at Sabres practice, so I'm not going to be able to see much of that game. But
now there's your lead. Sabres practice. Yeah. We'll see what we've got on Josh Norris.
They
got
to practice
Zach
for
Benson.
A week now because the next game is until a week from today.
Yeah.
Yep.
In New Jersey. So it's almost like training camp.
So staying fresh, let's knock the cobwebs off a little bit, because we haven't had to talk about the Sabres necessarily for a little bit here, Paul. When they come back, the trade deadline's also right around the corner, too. And when you look at the Sabres team, if they were to make a move here at the deadline, what are you thinking they're going to go with here? Would they want to add somewhere in the forward or the defensive core, and where would you want to?
I would want to add defense, because I think the reason that they slid a little bit at the end there, in a regular schedule, I think maybe they're fine, but I think running those four defensemen out there for 23, 24 minutes, in Darlene's case, 27, normally they do play better when they play more, but it, with the condensed schedule, it's just too much, I think. So I would like to see a defenseman. Now, Brayton and I were going over it yesterday. There really aren't too many defensemen right now that would fit that category that can take some minutes away. Like, of course, Buffalo fans want Stanley because he's 8 foot three and weighs 450 pounds and puts people through the back wall. That's not what they need. They're fine right now when it comes to that kind of stuff. Dunn can take care of that. Malenstein, whatever. They stand up for each other now. I have no problem. They don't. That's not what they need.
Yeah, that doesn't.
I know that makes everybody feel better when you got some guy that wins every fight. I couldn't care less. I would like a guy who can play hockey actually, and that can take some of those minutes away from those guys. Not be a number 6D, but take some of those minutes away. I think Timmins got himself into some problems because they were playing him 19 minutes. They miss him terribly on the penalty kill. Terribly. I mean, he's a shot-blocking machine. He was one of the reasons he and Samuelson and Tuck and McLeod and that they were number one in the league in penalty killing, which they aren't anymore. But I think at 19 minutes, 5-on-5, he would have turnover problems and stuff, and I think it hurt them a little bit. So even him, that's not who I'm thinking that could take some of those minutes. It's a rental.
Yeah, it's a rental.
It's a rental.
Short-term
but
thing.
Just find, maybe if you can, find a guy that can help take away some of those minutes. And also the other thing I wouldn't mind seeing is a depth top nine forward. You know, that because, you know, when they get injuries up front at the top nine, they have problems.
And they've been dealing with injuries with the forward group.
So, yeah, if that becomes available to them, definitely, I think. A caller called us yesterday and talked about, well, what about Hischier? I go, well, yeah, if he were available, of course I would want Sabres to be in on that.
It's New Jersey's captain. I can't see that.
But I just can't imagine why New Jersey would do that, you know, even in the situation they're in right now. Part of the reason the situation they're in right now is look at how many games Jack Hughes has played. Not many. He's been hurt. Hischier's been in and out of the lineup. So, I told the caller, sure, I'd be interested in that, but I'm not sure the Devils would be interested in
they're
that.
Not in.
But
I wonder, you mentioned a defenseman that could take away some of the minutes and really help alleviate something there. And I look down at the standings at the St. Louis Blues, and Justin Falk has been a player that's been out there.
Perfect.
He's not a pure rental, though. There's another year left on that contract. So, you know, you do have to make that work.
Yeah, and you have to do – if they sign Tuck, they're going to have to do some gymnastics here. But I think Beck Malenstein really enjoys being a Sabre. I don't – if you went to Malenstein and Benson and a couple of the other guys who need contracts and say, look it. We are in salary cap problems for 1 year. And then the Skinner thing goes back down again. If they sign Tuck, it's like, okay, we'd like to do a one-year thing with you. We'll take care of you next year. And just tell them, we like you. We want you here. We need you to help us for a year. And then we'll take care of you, you know, the next year when you come up. And I think some of the players that are up for contract would say, yeah, I want to be here. Let's do it, you know, type of a thing. So they would have to do some contract gymnastics a little bit for next year. So be it. I mean, I think they should sign Tuck. I'm not signing the 30-year-old for 7 years, but I think this is a very special situation, and if the contract becomes a problem after a while, it becomes a problem.
Yeah, and they're in a much better position to have those kind of conversations than they have been in years prior, where it more felt like, when can I get out of here? Now it's, let's keep the band together, let's keep the ball rolling. Paul, Thanks so much for jumping on.
Thanks
with us.
For the English. So yeah, now Brad Ryder, since he's back, he loves it when I blow his show up. I mean, I was always good at that because I'd come in and ask him, "Are we going to be playing Budgie?" Do you guys know Budgie?
I've heard of it.
Be sure you look that up. Mm-hmm. So we'd be talking about Budgie instead of sports or.
I know they're talking music yesterday.
There was one time I was on with Tom Puckett over at WBEN, and Brad was here at night. It was, and Brad could hear the interview on BEN, and he went to it, but Brad could like ask questions with Tom, not bothering Tom. Tom wouldn't hear it, so Brad would say, "Tom, I got the next one," and then Tom would, "Tom, I told you I wanted the next question with Paul. Paul's supposed to be out with me." Tom, it was hilarious. It was really, really fun. As I said, it didn't bother Tom at all because Tom couldn't hear him.
Yeah, he couldn't hear him.
I couldn't hear him. So we were on BEN that way. Mm-hmm. But Brad, it was a great bit. And they got to hear some hockey, too. I mean, Brad wasn't doing the interview, but in between Brad playing, having fun with it, they got to hear the interview, too. So that's what I like to do. I like to try to blow up Brad's show. Good. So maybe I'll start doing that with your show a little more.
Brad Ryder and Owen Parker on from 1 to 3 today. Paul, you've got practice to get to.
Yeah, so I
got to
go.
Thanks so much for jumping on with us. And we've got to hit a break as well. 803-0550, the number to call. You want to jump on, give your thoughts on the Sabres, the trade deadline, Olympic hockey going on as well. We haven't even touched on any Bills free agent ideas as well because Mike Evans is getting a little bit of a run here. So we'll jump into that. We've got plenty of time today. We're on till 1, so keep hanging with us on WGR Sports Radio 550, now also on 107.7 and 104.7 FM.
Now Quinn Hughes, who played 3.5 minutes in overtime. Quinn Hughes shoots! He scores! He scores! And the United States will move on and face Slovakia in the semis.
Kenny Albert on the call. Quinn Hughes in overtime. The U.S. wins in the 3-on-3. I'm going to scratch a football season kind of itch, if I may, right here. So the final four teams are the U.S., Slovakia, Finland, and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But really, who has Canada beaten? Have they beaten anybody good?
Czechia twice.
Okay, congratulations. They beaten anybody good? No, I don't think so.
I mean, who do you consider good? Just the top four?
I just think they're pretenders. They don't deserve to be here.
Oh.
It's football. It's scratching that itch. They're pretenders.
Fraud watch
for Canada. No, I'm kidding. They'll play Finland. The U.S. plays Slovakia, who has been the upstart of the tournament, right? Like the nice story to this point.
I mean, even at this point, they are in. Imagine a sport where you have a team that is in the semifinals, and what's their percentage to win it all?
I think it's 1%.
2%. 2%.
Yeah, not thought to be likely to win. We'll take your thoughts on overtime if you'd like. 803-0550, talking about, you know, you see 3-on-3 in that format, and it's wild. It seems to me okay to settle a Tuesday night game in the NHL, but a random, you know, Buffalo-Montreal game. Okay, fine. Let's settle this thing and go home. There are 82 of these. The gold medal round. And last week, we weren't sure if it was 5-on-5 or 3-on-3. And sure enough, it is going to be 3-on-3.
Right.
The gold medal game will be 3-on-3 for the gold medal in overtime, which is nuts. But you probably get a nice goal because 3-on-3 often does produce goals, and they tend to be nice goals.
And that was a nice goal yesterday.
It was a very nice goal. Marner's goal was very nice, too.
Marner's goal was nice. Lekkonen was a breakaway.
Yep. You get nice goals.
I mean, Marner danced through all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that really would be the way to do it. You want to take a chance? You have to have one or two guys do that. Go hero mode and try to score a goal like that so that if they don't, you've got somebody back. And it's not a 2-on-0 back the other way if you don't succeed.
There's a great line from Mark Stone asked about Mitch Marner and his inability to score big goals or come through in the big moment. He said he hasn't had that experience. He's seen him, you know, play in big moments, the Four Nations and important games, and then a game-winning goal for Canada in this last round yesterday. Stone said, "I think that's a Toronto thing." It's pretty funny.
It's great.
It's pretty good. Meanwhile, guys, is there any wonder why Vegas, Mark Stone with Vegas, why Vegas is probably going to forever be a powerhouse in the NHL? Because they won't have fans, maybe ever, that get on their players for not doing enough in big moments, right? It's one of these things the NHL has with, whether it's Florida, Tampa, versus Toronto, Buffalo. Like, we care a lot.
Boston.
Yeah. You're going to be called a bum on the radio every day for a year in Toronto and in Buffalo.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And is that ever going to happen in Vegas, or a single day?
Probably would never happen. That would be more the team underperforms and then it's time to check out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not for everybody, but not in large droves. Yeah, would there be attention?
If they
did even what Toronto did. And Toronto was what? They went to the playoffs 7 years in a row and they didn't get out of the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if Vegas did that, yeah, I don't know how much of that there would be.
If Vegas did that, they would
get that league-wide.
They'd probably trade everybody and fire everybody three years into that because they act quickly.
That's also true. Anyway. Right. No, that's a better point. Vegas would do something.
Right.
They would make a trade. They would act like they would. I mean, they would sign someone else's best player. They've kind of become the Yankees in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? They don't do anything themselves. They're going to take another team's best player. That's the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yep. Aaron in Buffalo. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, thanks for calling.
Well, this may not work with the Canada game from yesterday because I actually rather enjoyed that overtime. But in general, overtime, as you were saying, just kind of that possession game. What if they just made a simple rule, like each time you cross a line, it's like, over and back. You can't go back. So you cross center ice. You can't take it back over. You just dump it in and turn over the other team. They can break it out. Something like as simple as that, just to keep the play moving instead of them going into the zone, then back to their own goalie and back, you know?
Yep.
Something like that.
A backcourt violation.
Sure. Like, if you can't carry it out of the offensive zone in overtime with possession, you have to keep the zone once you take it in.
All right. Do we keep that rule all the way through? Like, if someone sends a pass back to the point and they miss and now it goes to center, does it have to be a change of possession?
No, I think it's just like carrying
it. If you do it on purpose?
Yeah. I've thought about that.
All right.
It is.
I'm not like totally
against it, totally
upset it with it. I'm upset with it being in these spots, in these games. The NHL, to me, does it right where I'm not in a rush to change it because they don't do it in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And if they insisted on it being in the playoffs, then I would be ready to like, okay, let's put a shot clock in or something because it's a little too gimmicky. But for the regular season, the NHL, it's fine. I'm going to maybe lose my mind if it's the gold medal game and it goes to overtime.
It's intense. There's no doubt about it. Dennis in St. Catharines. Hey, Dennis.
Yeah, Jeremy. I hate 3-on-3, too. And on top of that, the European rinks are 10 feet bigger.
Well, not the one they're playing on this tournament.
No, this one they screwed up, apparently. But most of the rinks, right. And that's just too open, I think, for a championship.
That's right. I don't know when the next time they're going to play the Winter Olympics in. When is the next? I know one of them is in Salt Lake City, but that's years away, I think. Like, are they going to play Olympics on the giant ice? I think they might. I got to find that. But because I think it would make it way worse. It would make it worse, this format, which they will keep, yeah. I assume, and now the ice gets bigger. There will be more of the, let me skate around and keep possession, and you're not going to take a chance to steal it from me. It's in France in 2030.
Okay.
I don't know what the size of the rink that'll be, but if it's bigger, I think it's going to be worse.
The Swedish league plays 3-on-3 in the regular season and 5-on-5 in the playoffs. So like the
right.
Same as the NHL. That's what makes this so different is the regular seasons that have it like this are fine. And then the playoffs it gets real and you'd think like even the gold medal game, one game, I guess what do they want? They don't want the gold medal game to be in the third overtime as the closing ceremonies are happening.
Right.
You know, like imagine I don't know if they extinguish the flame or they take it on a torch. They start walking out of town. Meanwhile, we're in overtime number 4 down at the ice rink. So,
I guess they just want their finish. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550 to join us. In the NFL, quickly, I saw something on the Bills I wanted to mention, which is there's a list of free agents at NFL.com. Kevin Patcher writes, list of free agents, 8 players who could be misvalued in 2026. It includes David Edwards on here.
Hmm.
So Bills guard David Edwards is a big bargain for them. I've said the last couple days and weeks, who are the players outperforming their contracts? And maybe I should not have, or maybe I have not said David Edwards, or have not said it enough, because he made $6 million the last 2 seasons.
Total.
And if he is the best guard in football, which I don't think many people think he's the best guard in football.
No.
However, he's the number one guard in the free agent class. He had his best year this past season. If he's one of the best guards in football, top 10 player, is he top 10 at his position? I don't know. But the top guards get $23 million, $20 million, $17
million. Right.
Like, is David Edwards going to come in way high because a lot of teams out there have seen the exploding guard market and he'll be the latest? I'll be very surprised if he's back with the Bills. But if they get him on the right deal.
Yeah, he was PFF's 24th ranked guard in the season.
Okay, so 24th ranked guard hits the open market as the number one guard. What's that guy get paid like?
Is he still the number one guard? Is Wyatt Teller not that after saying yesterday that he's going to hit the market?
That's right, I forgot.
He was lower last year in PFF.
The entire Browns offensive line is currently a free agent.
Right. Every
starting player on their offensive line is available.
Yeah, but if he is number one, number two, whatever, I think he's getting a big payday. This was a shock.
15 at least.
Yeah. A couple years ago, the Miami guard, Robert Hunt, who was, I remember it being said about him, it was after he signed like a giant deal. Like, wow, this guy is good, but he is not Quentin Nelson. And he got a $100 million contract from the Carolina Panthers. A guard that was good, but not considered to be like the best guard in football. I don't think he's ever been like an all-pro or anything. And he got that deal. How different is that than what Edwards could very well get coming up? Where everybody that covers and watches the Bills and follows the Bills looks up on March 6th when free agency starts and sees, wait, David Edwards signed a $100 million contract? Like that, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility at all.
803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Waiting on our Bills restructures. They should be coming. A week from today, we'll be talking combine, players at the combine, doing interviews, meeting with the media.
Hunt's contract was exactly 5 years, $100 million, by the way. That's a guard that had never made a Pro Bowl or an All-Pro before he signed it.
I just can't wait for David Edwards to sign with another team so I can consult my free agency flow chart and say, nope, not for that money.
Why is the guard position exploding?
Because
what are these teams thinking?
Because every position explodes. Everyone except for running back.
Tight end doesn't explode.
The best tight ends
are still making like $13 million, $15 million a year, aren't they?
You want to wait like about a year or two? What's Trey McBride making?
That's a good question, but it hasn't happened yet.
What's Brock Bowers making? What's Dalton Kincaid making?
We'll see if that next generation of them do it.
Yeah.
But not every position explodes. Is safety exploded? Like, guard is really exploded, I think. From being a position that I've always thought of as being pretty replaceable.
Yeah. Trey McBride, by the way, the answer to that is he's already on a 4-year deal, making 19 per year.
The best player in the best tight end in the league making less than the 5th highest paid guard to me is strange.
That's probably only because the position is still evolving. And what did you have? You had how many difference makers? Kelce and Kittle? And those guys,
right.
When there's only two, there aren't 15 to drive the whole every year. Every year that's getting like Raptors at the fences, that money's moving up. You need a position where there are a lot of guys that hit the open market and bring it up a little bit every year. And I don't think the tight end position has had just like the top tier guys to do it. Now they might when, I don't know, maybe it's Colston Loveland and Brock Bowers and
right
guys this year. I mean, maybe Kincaid. I don't know. Kincaid will be an interesting one when the time comes.
Yeah.
803-0550, your phone number. Paul at 7 o'clock on yesterday at the Olympics, the tournament, and also the Sabres updates as they're back in less than a week. Rasmus Dahlin presumably on his way back to join the team after Sweden got eliminated by Tage Thompson in the U.S. yesterday. You can give us a ring. We are, of course, here on WGR. We're streaming on YouTube. You can find us on FM on the FM dial as well, 107.7 and 104.7 FM.